down in Memphis. Lower the curtain down, alright. I got no time for private consultation under the Milky Way tonight.
The Church and their instant classic, Under the Milky Way, and the distinctive voice of Steve Kilby from the 1988 album Starfish. The band has recently released album number 25, Further Deeper, and Kilby has just penned an autobiography, Something Quite Peculiar, which traces his 35 years as a singer, songwriter and bassist with the band. I caught up with him this week. By chance, it was at exactly the time the Melbourne Cup was due to start. So I asked him if he wanted to postpone to watch the race. But in keeping with his iconoclastic reputation, he said he thought horse racing was cruel. Prophetic words, perhaps. A warning, there's some frank discussion of drug use ahead.
Might I know what you were fine? I knew what you were looking for.
Steve Kilby, thanks very much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, reading your book solved a bit of a mystery for me, and that is that when I was in the first or second year of high school, the thing that you had to have was a paisley shirt. And we scoured op shops, vintage shops, everywhere for them. And when we got them, they had to be worn like buttoned right up.
Right up to the collar as well, yeah.
Yeah. And I read your book and find out that you might be responsible for this. Tell us
I was,
about
yeah,
paisley.
I brought them back. I single-handedly. Well, we were going around Australia looking for a look. And the thing that was the most out of fashion in 1980, 81, was psychedelia. There was no psychedelic music. There's no people. It was punk. It was new wave. We wanted to look like the future, baby. We didn't want to hark back to bloody Norwegian wood and strawberry fields forever. So the Church went in all these op shops, and after a while we got to know the ladies in there. Ah, the Church are here. Look what we've got. And I, in my spare room in Roselle, I had a mountain of paisley shirts. No wardrobe, just a mountain of them. And then the fashion sort of caught on, and then the paisley shirts disappeared back out of the op shops and people were selling them for like $100.
And it filtered down to kids like me at high school.
Yeah.
That is
and buttoned
really
all the way
amazing.
Up because yep. We used to button them all the way up, even the collar.
Yeah.
You could do that when you're thin.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Let's talk about your influences because while others were, your contemporaries were doing something quite different, you were tapping into something retro, and retro wasn't even a thing then.
No, we were classicists. We loved the Beatles. We loved Dylan. We loved the Stones. We liked organic rock and roll, and we rejected the 80s. It was very frustrating to be in the middle of the 80s and seeing it for the rubbish it was, but nobody else could see it. I was aware of the zeitgeist. I didn't want to have a long fringe hanging over one side and sound like the Thompson Twins. I wanted to have long hair and play loud guitar and be like the Beatles or the Stones.
Oh, come on, what about Spandau Ballet? Or even
I hated
sort of
Spandau Ballet.
Boy George at his best.
Hate Boy George, hate Duran Duran, hate New Romantics. They were the antithesis of what I wanted to be. Like, they're meaningless, they're shallow, they're stupid, they're inane. Just like the Melbourne Cup.
Which is going on right
now. This is going on right now as we talk.
Now, tell us about image control, because I think your career spans,
35 years now.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
And you've gone from being a kid influenced by the Beatles in the 60s to being on Countdown, hosting Countdown.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And now you're interacting with fans on Facebook.
Yeah.
What about image control? Is it something that you've always tried to be good at?
I tried to tightly control my image, which was why I was on all those TV shows not saying anything, because I wanted to be so full of mysteriousness.
This got you in trouble with Donnie Sutherland.
Yeah, Donnie Sutherland. Yeah. What you come on here for?
Because you just sat on the couch and said nothing, being
cool.
I wasn't
talking. I was too cool to answer his questions. Like, it's like, I'm going to sit here until you answer me a question that's cool enough for me to be bothered answering it. I'm pretending I'm not down on the street doing all that stuff, you know. I'm sort of too cool and too
So that's part of the mystique that,
that was what I was trying to build up. Yeah.
But it's also part of you. It's also
Not really. No, I could have been as I am now and go, yeah. What about them Swannies? Yeah, it's a hot day, isn't it? Yeah, but I didn't think I could be friendly and sort of intelligent at the same time, which was a big mistake. You can be the most intelligent geezer in the world, the coolest geezer in the world, and still stop and say, hi, yeah, how are you? Yeah, I'm glad you like my record, but I thought I had to be Iceman, you know, like, I don't know, trying to imitate how I thought David Bowie or someone would be, you know. Lou Reed. I saw Lou Reed on GTK when I was a kid, and Lou Reed was sort of sitting there going, yeah. The guy's going, so what do you spend all your money on, Lou? Drugs. You know, I wanted to be like that, sort of some untouchable epitome of hip. And I failed miserably.
Oh, well, you didn't fail miserably. You have 750 songs or so listed with APRA against your name. Your band's been going for 25 years. You're in the ARIA Hall of Fame for whatever that is worth. A lot. A lot of bands would love that. How do you cope with criticism? Is it something you've learned to shrug off?
No, I still don't. You know, we played in Canberra the other night and it was a room full of people who were loving it. And there was a couple of people who didn't know we weren't playing old songs. I go home and I obsess about the guy who's standing there going, this is boring, play your old songs. I'm not thinking about the 400 people who are clapping and cheering all the way through. I'm thinking about this one guy standing there, this is boring. I'm going home being angry about him. So, I really don't take criticism very well.
How did you handle last year when you announced on the band's Facebook page that you're going to be changing from longtime guitarist Marty Wilson Piper to Ian Hoag from Powderfinger? There was a backlash from some people who were, and that's very close and personal, that stuff. They're your fans.
I was angry, and I was angry with all the people saying, you're nothing without Marty. You can't do anything without Marty. You guys should break up if Marty's not there. You can't do an album without Marty. And I was really, I was angry and pissed off and wanted revenge. I wanted to go around their houses and
But then
burn
you
them
said,
down.
It's my effing band.
Yeah.
Which
it
was
is.
A great sort of flag in the sand.
It is my band. If they go and form your own band if you want to decide who's in your band. Besides, I didn't even kick him out. It wasn't even my choice. He didn't want to be part of it anymore, I presume. A day came when he stopped answering anybody's phone calls, emails, hotmails, Gmails, messages, texts. He just wouldn't answer them.
So is this what's changed about the music scene? This kind of, I mean, I'm trying to get an idea of what you've seen over these decades where you could go and be who you were in pretty much privacy 30 years ago. Now it's very different. You analysed more closely. Or is that wrong?
No, it's all changed. People can get to you. People can write to you. You know, like 30 years ago when you put out a record, you really had, apart from a few reviews, you didn't really know what your fans thought of it until you met them at gigs or, you know, some handwritten letters would come through, you know, I like your new record. But these days, everything that happens, and if you kick someone out of a band 30 years ago, there was no comment. It was like, that was gone. But these days, everybody's, you know, got an opinion. Everybody can write to you. Everybody can post their opinion. There's, on like Facebook alone, there's like 10 church fan pages where all these questions are debated, and like an idiot I go and read them all, and then when I find the one comment going, I think they'll be hopeless without Marty, once again that's the one I'm obsessing about and going, no, don't say that. I guess I'm just a megalomaniac. I want everybody to like what I do.
I don't think that's so uncommon. Now, in this book, you're startlingly open about your drug use, your taste for pot and psychedelics, and also about your 11-year heroin addiction. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that world that you entered, the life that you lived.
I passed into shadow, especially when I went to Sweden, when I moved to Sweden to be with my daughters, my Swedish daughters. In Sweden, I really entered the underworld. And my friends, they were all junkies, they were all prostitutes and thieves and pickpockets and small-time hustlers and dealers and importers and all this kind of thing. And I got a lot of my hard edges knocked off me.
So were you drawn into the drama of their lives? Or
Very much so. There's a whole book I could have written about Sweden. So much I could have written about my experiences there and the things that happened to me. And I started to, I guess that's where I started to get some humility and some, once I was walking down a street, I didn't have any money, and I found a juicy cigarette button, picked up and was lighting it. And I've sort of I guess a guy you'd say is a tramp. What's the word we use these days? Transients? Mm. We don't say hobos anymore. That's too picturesque. Homeless. Isn't it? Homeless. A homeless man came up to me and said in Swedish, "Don't do that here. Have a proper cigarette." Oh. And pulled out a packet. Game. And that's when you know you're down and out, when there's a homeless guy offering you a cigarette. Don't smoke that one off the footpath. Have this one. But, you know, I was down and out. I was desperate.
And then you write that heroin, that you didn't really kind of stop. It sort of had done with you.
Yeah. Yeah, heroin finished with me. I didn't finish with heroin. Heroin finished with me. It was like the end of my sentence, and it let me go. And then when I went back and tried it, if I was to try it now, I don't get those pleasurable effects. I don't get that feeling of being cocooned in soft wool. I get all those nasty effects that other people were getting, sort of going, oh, God, it makes me depressed and itchy and I can't sleep and I feel rotten. So somehow, I don't know how that happened. I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's the grace of God or if it's a chemical reaction within my own body going, God, we've got to save this idiot from himself. or a bit mixture of everything. But yeah, heroin, it's not like I'm sitting here now going, oh, I wish I could have some heroin. It's just purely that the stuff doesn't work for me anymore.
And yet you're not entirely anti-drugs either.
No, I take all the other drugs still. Yeah, I'll have a go at anything else. Sometimes I still have a go at heroin, but it just doesn't do anything anymore. I like drugs. Why shouldn't you? I don't think there's a moral, you know, if it hadn't been for the illegality of drugs, no one would have cared what I was doing. You know, I was functioning, writing songs, paying my taxes, going around tour. I like taking drugs. I like the feelings. Just like some people like alcohol. I never liked alcohol, but I like the way drugs made me feel.
Now, Steve Kilby, you mentioned God just before.
God, yeah.
Is he a part of your life?
Absolutely, yeah. God's a part of my life, whoever he is, whatever he is. I don't want to... It's not Jehovah. It's not the Judeo-Christian God. My God's a huge, beautiful, warm, loving guy. He's not some old bastard going, I'm going to punish you and the Jews are my chosen people and all that. No, he's not. He's not like that. He's like, I'm here. I'm the universe. If you want me, I'm here. Look for me. Scream out my name. Want me more than anything. And that's the only time, as I write my book, the only time I could really make real contact with him was when I was so desperate that there was nothing standing in the way. It was like, I want you. I can't do this on my own. And he was there.
Steve Kilby, from Paisley shirts to God in a hop, skip and a jump. Thanks for talking to us.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Let's go find out who won the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
Where the birds are singing vespers, the four rivers bringing out my best. In this place, forgive our trespasses, and less is more, much more to confess.
Steve Kilby's book is Something Quite Peculiar, and this song is Laurel Canyon from the church's recent album, Further Deeper. It's